Good evening, everybody. Thank you so much for coming. We are approaching Parshas Metzora, as well as Chag HaMatzos Pesach, so let's connect the Parsha to the Mitzvah of Magid this evening. Zos tia Torah Metzora b'yom taharaso v'huva el hakohen. So if someone got tzara'as, has been stricken with what is classically translated as leprosy, right, for speaking Lashon Hara or one of the other sins. So again, what's the story? He had to be excommunicated, he had to leave the town and sit in isolation until the signs of tzara'as, the skin disease, disappeared. And the Torah says, v'huva el hakohen. How would you translate that phrase, v'huva el hakohen? Not that he goes to the kohen, but rather he is brought to the kohen. He's brought to the kohen. So the Ramban here wants to argue one shot. Then he says, Chazal say different shot. Ramban says that when he notices that his lesions, his skin disease has gone away, so what happens next? Says the Ramban, Biyom sheyirtze lihitaher, on the day that he wants to become pure, sheyuva el hakohen. Then, and only then, meaning when he wants to become pure, only then is he brought to the Kohen. Ki ein lo tahara la'olam ela alpiv, meaning we know that you cannot become Tohar unless the Kohen pronounces you Tohar. But the idea, number one, of the Ramban is that this person is not going to become Tohar unless he himself decides, I, Mr. Metzora man, now want to take the first steps, and I want to be brought to the Kohen. Alternatively, step number two, the approach number two in the Ramban is, no, in the Midrash Torah Kohanim, what does it mean? Delay, namely, the second he notices that his skin is healed, yuva al korcho elakohen, says the Ramban. He has to be brought, even against his own will, to the Kohen. He doesn't get to decide, oh, now I'm ready to go to the Kohen. No. If your body is healed, you need to go immediately to the Kohen. You may not delay, say Chazal. And in fact, the Netziv elaborates on this idea. Because let's say you were tameh. So, oh gosh, you see the lesion on your arm. You know it might be tzara'as. Almost like you have COVID symptoms. And you don't really want to get a COVID test because you don't want to be found to be positive, right? So too, let's say you found something on your skin. Oh gosh, right? You wear the extra long sleeves and a sweater. You don't want anyone to notice. And there you would need Chazal to tell you, whether you like it or not, you need to go to the Kohen because you need to get it checked out. Like you need to force a kid to go to the doctor.
But that's sort of not true because, I mean, actually I heard the shir from Rav Talbus, but if it's Yantiv and Yom HaShi,
yes,
will be on Yantiv, then you don't go.
The Kohen can choose not to look, right. But the man himself who has the lesion is not allowed to wait. So says the Netziv, that makes a lot of sense when the Torah needs to tell you, despite your tumah, you need to be brought to the Kohen. I don't care if you don't want to be declared impure or not. You need to go to the doctor if you're sick. In contrast, what might you have thought? That, listen, my lesion went away. It's up to me when I become tahor. To become pure is up to me. To become impure, okay, again, that's not my decision. If God gives me a little bit of a patch, I'm not allowed to ignore it. But if God took away the patch, I might have thought that I can delay the process of purification. And says the Netziv, that's why the Torah needs to say, no, v'huva, gamze bal korcho. In the same way that you had to go to the Kohen when you were impure, so too you have to go right away even when it comes to purity. So it's a little bit of an irony there, because you might have thought that purity can be delayed. No, even purity needs to happen immediately. So, all right, beautiful. We learned a little bit of Parsha. So, namely, that there are two approaches when someone wants to become pure. Approach number one is that he can delay and make his own decision. It's my halachic status, whether I'm pure or not. It's my body. It's my life. I can make my own decisions. That was number one in the Ramban. But number two, and seemingly the main approach of Chazal, that no, it's not up to you. Once you're pure, you need to do it. And we're going to use this as a springboard to discuss the way to teach Sipur Yetzeas Mitzrayim, the story of the Exodus of Egypt, at the Seder night. Because as a Rebbe, as an educator, I know there are two versions of growth. The first version of the Ramban of the Mitzorah is that when he's ready for it, when he's ready to become pure, he'll find the Kohen. And number two is whether he's ready or not, he must be brought to the Kohen. And so too, again, on a somewhat of a loose connection to the Parsha, we'll say that education and spiritual growth can also happen one of those two ways. Either what? Exactly, it's going to happen naturally, his way, when he's ready, or no. Whether you like it or not, it's Pesach. Got to sit down and we got to belt it out. So let's learn the right way to teach the Torah. Who here is going to be leading a Seder this Pesach? All right? Peter is going to be a bystander and one of his children. Who are you going to do? Shlomo?
Both. Shlomo and Shlomo.
You have two, what does that mean?
Two Shlomo.
You have a daughter who married Shlomo.
Right.
But his last name's not Weissman.
Right.
Oh, because I just found out today that someone got engaged. There was an altar who got engaged to an altar. All right, Mazel Tov to both altar families. So that was interesting. Interesting to hear. Like, it took me like a couple seconds.
What?
Ah, very good, very good. Wait, AB, were you not leading a Seder this year? Were you going to be? Oh, you are. So everyone's leading. Robert, you're leading?
I am.
You are. Okay. So I'm leading half of one. So we're going to go to my in-laws for the Siddur Mezuz Hashem. Stay tuned for Jerry Karp's Chabura, first day of Yontif, and Dr. Jerry Karp Shlita. And the second night is up to the kids, who are now the parents, meaning me and my brother-in-law. So we'll, Bez Hashem, lead the second Seder. My father-in-law will lead the first Seder, and us the second Seder. So everyone who's been in a Seder has probably had moments of inspiration, moments of growth, and moments of hunger, moments of overheating, moments of impatience. And it takes a very talented quarterback, leader, educator to know where to call the play, how to call the play. You know, are we rushing? Are we slowing it down? When to call timeout? When to blitz? Right. And by the way, no question about it. I've been recently, I don't want to go into too many details. I dive into the 7-10 minion. It's my approach to life. You know, I don't like chametz. You know, I don't like giving bread time to rise. I'm a matzah Jew. I dive in slow. I'm probably the slowest, you know, Shimon Esrei in Bergen County. But at the same time, I like when things move. I like when things move. You know, in my own way. So I was at a meal recently, and this guy was not being a 7-10 matzah Jew, and his wife pushed him. And I was like, you know, Baruch Hashem. So AB's right. Sometimes it's the wife who chops. You know, it's time to move things along. So we are going into too many details, but I want to thank Adam's wife. I was at Adam's wife. They're good. Anyway. I saw AJ earlier. AJ's the man. All right, so let's learn the Rambam. The Rambam writes the 157th mitzvah out of the 613, at least the 157th positive commitment, is what L'sapir was described. So it's the 15th night of Nisan. You got to tell the story in the beginning of the night. And here's the key term of the Rambam, the Sefer Mitzvos. Kifitzachos Lashon HaMesapir. Based on the what? The ability of the one leading the Seder. Right? So that clearly already indicates, obviously, that not every Seder is going to look the same. So if you have the ability to articulate a certain way, to embellish a certain way, it's going to look a little bit different. V'chol mi sheyosef b'ma'amar. And if you elaborate on the story, the Ya'arich HaDvarim, Ba'agdalas Masha Asalanu Hashem, if you go into great detail about all the different things that Hashem did for us, U'Masha Asulanu HaMitzrim, and all the things that the Mitzrim did for us, right? I'm sorry, all the things, U'Masha Asulanu HaMitzrim, all the things that the Mitzrim did to us, right? May all the Chamas, Ve'ech Lacha Hashem, you know, etc., all the bad guys, the good Hashem who took us out, and to thank Him. You know, I'll call it a Tov section. Basically, the Rambam's elaborating on the Maimar Chazal. V'chol ha-ma'arich l'saper v'zimayim. Hari zim eshubach. The more you go into the detail, the better. Right? So says the Rambam, there's no seemingly limit. There's no maximum of this mitzvah. And the Torah says, v'gadol bin rabbi yomahu. So what does that mean? That you got to tell your kid the story. So what is the point number one of the Sefer HaMitzvos? So again, there is room for diversity here, right? So someone who has the ability to embellish, and maybe some gifted teachers, etc., they're going to have the opportunity to do that. But the key question for tonight is really, how do we measure the give and take between the father and the son? Because the Mechilta says, wait a minute, ki yishalcha bincha, when your son asks you, right? That's what the Torah says, when your son asks you, so you got to tell him. Well, you might have thought there for what? What if your kid doesn't ask you? Yachol im yishalcha bincha ata ma'agid lo. So you might have thought that if your kid asks you, you got to tell him, tamar lomar, v'gadda levincha, afal pi she'eno sha'olcha. So here again, we have this dichotomy. Like the Ramban said in Parsha Mitzorah, where on one hand, ideally, you should have the kid who asks the question. At the same time, you're going to find yourself potentially in a situation where the kid is not going to ask the question. And therefore, what do you do if the kid doesn't ask the question? You have to tell him anyway, right? So sometimes it could be a little bit less than natural, right? And what are you supposed to do in that situation, right? What are you supposed to do if the kid... Oh, says Adam, this is not news. We know that there are four different sons, right? And one of them is the Enea de Lishol, who doesn't know how to ask. And the story needs to be told for him. So tonight we're going to speak in halachic terminology about how to balance the Seder for the different types of sons. Because again, on one level, we just learned on the books that ideally you should embellish. And that could work really nicely for the kid who's asking. Yet the Rambam also wrote in the name of the Midrash, and even if the kid doesn't ask, you still got to figure out a way to tell the story. So we know there's a biblical commandment on the books to tell the story of Exodus on the 15th night of Nisan. And famously, Reb Chaim Brisker has 3 to 5, right, famous discrepancies between the regular mitzvah that we'll be doing later this evening when we know Marv. We know every single night of the year we're supposed to remember that Hashem takes out of Mitzrayim. Yet, there's a thing called the Seder night. So anyone know one of the famous reasons? How is the story of the Pesach Seder different than the regular mitzvah of remembering Egypt? What's different between, you know, tonight when we say the Shema at the end of Vayomer, we're supposed to remember that. What? Oh, so this is exactly the answer I was looking for. Right? That, here, number one, so in the Shuri, Shuri Mizach Avi Mori. So Rav Soloveitchik, when he gave the Yurtzeit Shir for his father, so in the first chelik of that sefer, page Yudalet Ha'arav 4, the footnote 4, on the bottom, so he has, 5 different pshatim over there, so we'll just elaborate on some of them. So reason number 2 is that on a regular night, a mere mentioning, oh, God, take it out of Mitzrayim is sufficient. But what? On the Seder night, the mitzvah is to go into all the details, all the miracles, etc. That's number 1 that's related to our discussion this evening. Another one that's related to our discussion this evening is what the question and answer form. Exactly what Jerome said. So, mitzvah zechiras, zechira omer sheyazkir yisrael mitzrayim la'atzmo. Meaning, what? So, on a general night, you have to just tell yourself that God took you out of Egypt. Good or whatever, God took the Jewish people out of Egypt. But what? On the Seder night, the idea is, no. She's happy at the bottom. So seemingly that's exactly what Jerome was saying, meaning it's not enough to just mention that God took us out of Egypt. There is an interaction. There's a give and there's a take. There's a giver, there's a receiver. There's a dialogue involved. Okay, very nice. So let's now open up the Shulchan Aruch here in this year and really try to figure out what this mitzvah looks like. Tafayin Beis. Tinokos Shegiu Lechinuch, mitzvah litein lechol echad kos lefanav. So if the kid is already old enough, 6, 7 years old or so, he gets his own cup, the 4 cups. And again, obviously grape juice is an option nowadays, but imagine giving a kid a cup of wine, But the idea is already the halacha wants the kid to be part of the Seder experience. What? Right, it's a mitzvah al-pichinuch, right. Right, so what do you want to say, Jerome, on that word? What do you want to be medayik? Mitzvah meaning what? Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, a mitzvah here seemingly means apichina, right? And then the next halacha in the Shulchan Aruch is mitzvah again. Lachalig latinokos klayos ve'egozim kidei sheyiru shinoi v'yishal. So again, so the famous idea of this Seder night is to put on a little bit of a show to pique the curiosity of the kid so that they see all the different things you're doing and that they ask. I remember my wife told me when I was, I think, just about engaged a little while ago, whereby her oldest nephew, my oldest nephew, from that side of the family, says, so remember when, so you say there's a J.J. Rosenbaum, a Jeremy Rosenbaum who made Aliyah since then to Efrat and Hadagan. So his oldest son is turning bar mitzvah, actually this coming Thanksgiving or so. So remember when he's a little kid, so J.J. is Abba, you know, put on the kittel or whatever. And literally the kid asked Abba, like, why are we doing it? It was exactly like textbook, like the shinuim, all the differences of the night were taking place. And the kid's like, what's going on, right? It was like this innocent kid looking with his eyes open and asking in response, like, what is this? Right. So Amy.
Preparing for all this,
right.
As if the family's going to do nothing.
Right. So Amy points out that the schools have ruined the spontaneity of the Seder. So that innocent, what? So this shiur is actually exactly going to try to figure out how to combat this contemporary issue where the kids have no surprises because they come home, you know, with the playbook already. You know, there's nothing you can really teach them, at least through these things. But that's the idea, meaning you do things so that the kid sees and he'll ask. So seemingly, if you look at the Shulchan Aruch alone, the goal of the father is to pique the curiosity. So you give them, again, candies, again, in the Shulchan Aruch, Lashon was nuts and whatever. And again, the post may even describe machlokas and when the best time to give it out is. So people point out that wait till after shul, wait till the nighttime, you know, when the, you know, to wet the palate, not physically, but, you know, get the conversation started, break the ice with the candy. And that is point number one. But what are they supposed to ask? So what did my nephew Shai ask? He said, like, what's going on? Is that a good question? Like, what's going on? Or is that too vague? Oh, so at the time he was very, very young, right? So let's say he was... Right, he was like five, right? Six, right? So here is how the Mishnah Berurah explains the domino effect. I mean, once the kid chaps that something is up, there's candy and I get my own cup of grape juice. You know, it's a weird night. It's a strange night. So what's going to happen? So we want him to start asking his own questions so that eventually he will ask the questions of the manishtan. That's the goal. So you want to get the juices flowing. You want to break the ice. So he will ask the manishtan. Wow. Again, as Chazal say, kidei shelo yishanu v'yishalu, that we don't want him to fall asleep. Rather, we want him to ask questions. Okay, now, when can the kid go to bed? So you want to keep him interested until Avadim Ayinu. Sheyedu inyan yitzias Mitzrayim. So Avadim Ayinu is really a small, mini version of the entire Pesach story, right, where we were slaves, and Hashem took us out, Shkayach, right, it's in a nutshell, the whole story. And what happens there? The Ikra Mitzvah HaTshuva Al-Sheles Beno, ding, 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 ding. Says the Mishnah Berurah, the main mitzvah is to answer the kid's questions. Because what does the Torah say? V'gadata l'bincha b'yamuhu leimor ba'avur zeh. Meaning, you're supposed to tell your kid why you're doing these things. Meaning, you have to give the kid an answer. Meaning, piquing the curiosity is step number one. And answering his questions is step number two. And the Mishnah Berurah goes on a little rant. And he says, do you know what people mistakenly do? That people keep the kid up to Manishtan. And what do they do after Manishtan? What do? They put the kids to bed. Oh, no, but you know what? What all the little kids, right. Right, so Jerome points out, listen, for a three-year-old, that's very age-appropriate. By the way, on a blunt level, it's very helpful sometimes when the three-year-olds go to bed because then you can actually embellish the story with the older kids. Sometimes when the three-year-old's up, you can get him away, hypothetically. You know, our four-year-old is so cranky and, you know, he wants to just get up to the Manishtan. You know, there are a decent amount of breaks at a Seder with little kids. You know, this kid makes it up to this point, then he goes to bed, this kid goes to, you know. You kind of have to know how to teach it to different age groups, you know, almost like, you know, the different versions of the Seder, and which is very much appropriate. What? What? Yeah, that, yeah, sir. Yeah, you got to get the festivities every minute. Very good. So, but what's the whole idea? That is that, says the Mishnah Berurah, if you get the kid to ask the questions, and you don't answer his questions, you mamish, you totally missed it. Wow. So let's try to again go through the Seder a little bit now, and try to get a game plan for the Seder this year, because tonight is Monday night. The Seder is in a little bit less than 2 weeks, right? Not this coming Friday night, but next Friday night. And imagine if you can really lead the Seder in the ideal fashion this year. That's the point of this year, to try to, you know, really lead a Maggid that accurately accomplishes the mitzvah. So what's the Shulchan Aruch say? We know that after you break the matzah, you take, one half for Afikoman. And what do you do with the other half? Yeah,
between the other two.
Right. And you say Manishtana on that one. Very nice. Okay, by the way, the Ramah therefore then adds that when you recite the Haggadah on the matzah, you should say it in a language that everyone understands. And he says, V'chein asa ri milondori, Adam, kol Haggadah b'lashon la'az. So the ri milondori, I don't know if you have any academics on me on this one, I don't know. So ultimately, what? Yeah, right. So he'll be telling me about this. But the idea is that he said the Haggadah over in his own language. I would imagine that Rabbi Yudin every year says the Haggadah over in English. I'm sure he has a Seder with like 50 people, and from different backgrounds. So there's no question that you're not doing anyone a favor by just reciting the whole Haggadah in Hebrew, if no one understands Hebrew. But then the Shulchan Aruch records that what should you do? So what do? You remove what? You remove the matzah from the table so that what? The kid will see and ask, right? You want to pretend that the meal is over, right? You do a little bit of a fake out. So after you break the matzah, you want to then pretend that the meal is over so that the kid is going to say, whoa, what's going on? What happened to the meal? So my friend who made Aliyah also to Ephra, Josh Abramson. So he had a Rebbe once. I don't know, he went to Yeshivat Levator. I don't know if it was one of his Rebbeim there. So that he saw this done really, really well once. That after they broke the matzah, Korech, so what do they do? Korech is when we also break the matzah because we have a sandwich. But Yachatz is what I'm talking about. At Yachatz, so they broke the matzah, and then the Rebbe started clearing the silverware. He literally started taking the plates and the spoons, and like literally he started clearing the table. And that was excellent because the kid was like, whoa, why are we clearing the table already, you know? See, that's what Chazal had in mind, right? So if it's natural,
they didn't even take.
Right, they had little tables, exactly.
They took the whole table.
Right, you would remove the table. Very different back then. Very good. And then again, we pour the second cup again, so that the kids will ask because they're gonna say, "Whoa, why are we pouring a cup already?" Because traditionally they wouldn't what? They wouldn't drink before they ate, meaning it was unusual to pour the second cup before the meal. So what are we starting to notice now? The questions are intended for an audience that no longer exists, maybe? Is that controversial to say or no? Meaning a lot of the social norms that were being broken to pique the curiosity are no longer social norms. So we're going to run into a pretty big problem, right? Is anyone's kids going to ask them a question? Well, Abba, why are you pouring a second cup of wine? We don't usually eat this. We don't usually drink it after the meal. Right? That doesn't represent. Right. So it's not normal to eat beseba, but at the same time, that is weird. So, ironically, right now one of the questions can become: why are we randomly leaning to the left? Right. You know, the answer might not make so much sense in our generation, but we have to figure this out because the Shulchan Aruch goes on to say. If the kid is not catching on, aviv melamdo, the kid needs to be taught, meaning the she'enu delisho, right? Meaning the whole idea is to pique the curiosity. You said there are two parts of the mitzvah, right? Pique the curiosity, number one. And number two, teach it to him in response. Yeah, but here we're saying that even back then, there were kids who were not going to chop. Like, they're not going to see it. So let's say you don't have a son. You know, the wife should ask. If not, you should ask yourself. A few of the Talmidei Chachamim, they ask themselves famously. Okay. Now, by the way, parenthetically, when a kid is not the one asking the question, you don't need to say Manishtana, by the way. You can just skip Manishtana. So like during COVID, maybe it was just like me and my wife up by that point. I don't know. In a Manishtana, the whole point is to get the kid to ask the questions. So if there's a substitute for the kid, you don't need to formally... Yeah, you say that. You say about the Mayino.
That's the way the Gemara works. It's
of course.
So that's why we do it here as well.
Right. So Adam's pointing out that the reason we have a question answer is like engaging in Torah Baal Peh. You know, like in the same way the Gemara is back and forth, we want the Haggadah to be back and forth, right? So who says that? Is that the Beis Halevi or Chaim? Forget about why is there no mitzvah to make a bracha on Magid, and some people say no, there's a unique birchas haTorah because of the nature of the Seder is a birchas baruch hamakom is a birchas haTorah. Okay, so I want to point out that there's seemingly two dinim that we have learned this evening. The Pri Chadosh is the one who says it explicitly, and he says it in the context of dipping. So what's the tiburishin of the Seder? What's the first dipping of the Seder? Karpas, right? So we dip a vegetable into the salt water. And the whole idea is that the kids are going to say, Abba, why are you doing that? Do we ever answer that question? We do not. That question...
We say, it's weird, we say,
very good. So the Pre-Chadosh asked that question, right? That the question is out of the appropriate order. He's asking why we're dipping twice, even though we haven't even dip twice yet, right? So the point of the Pri Chadosh, though, is the following. That even though we don't need to answer this question, but the whole point of this is we want the kid to ask. Again, like the Mishnah Berurah said, just keep on doing weird things so that he'll ask a lot of other questions. And again, to break the ice, so what do we see from this Pri Chadosh? There are two dinim. Din number one, get the kid to ask a question, period. Whether or not it relates to Yetzias Mitzrayim, that's number one. And then number two is to ask questions that are more specific towards the story, right? And ironically, getting the kid to ask the questions that don't relate to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is an accomplishment because, again, it will lead to him asking those questions which do pertain to Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim. So I thought that was a fair conclusion of that. Pri Chadosh, just getting the kids to ask the questions inherently makes sense. Right. Shalom Lishma, Baal Lishma. Or by the way, what is the, the Gemara said that the Rebbe should start the shiur with a joke. You know, the idea is to create an environment. But before we go into that, I want to point out that on a very practical level, the Halichos Shlomo, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, speaks to our generation again. I don't want to pick favorites, but this is my favorite Pesach Sefer on a halachic level. He says, we have a problem. Leaning doesn't really appear to be an act of freedom. Dipping is not an act of freedom. So many of the halachas that we perform, which were originally intended to display freedom, no longer accomplish that goal because you don't appear to be a free man when you dip anymore. So you know what? We have a problem. Because originally, what was the answer? Hashem took us out of Egypt. And that explained what? Now that we're free, that explains why we lean to the left as if we're kings, why we're dipping as if we're kings. But nowadays what? Hashem took us out of Egypt and therefore what? I still don't get why you're leaning to the left. I still don't get why you're dipping. The practical freedom imagery in our generation is not associated with these actions. So therefore, it says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, that changes the mitzvah of Magid. Because it's not enough to tell him that we're free, because it doesn't address his questions. So therefore, Chayavim Litain Shuva Al She'ela Sabanim Manishtane. You need to therefore explain. Ulaba'erlam et Shnei HaDvarim Alalu. So again, what are the other questions? Why do we eat matzah? And what else? What else am I missing? What? And Maru. So those questions are going to be answered. Those questions are included in the Haggadah. The story will explain Masa, and the story will explain Maru. The story will not explain why we dip and why we lean to the left. But those are the dipping and the Haseba are not included in the story of the Haggadah. So therefore, unbelievable, you have to go into detail. Wow. And in the footnote here, the Dvar Halachi says, when the father recites Avadim Ayinu, do you know what Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach says? The father should explain how Avadim Ayinu answers the questions. Meaning, if you're a good teacher, you need to tell the kid, oh, by the way, do you know you just asked a really good question? And do you know that I'm answering your question? But all the while that it's a formal recital, you recite the Manishtana because you're cute, and I say Avadim Ayinu because I'm old. That's not a give and take. That is a duet. That's like two people performing an act together, which is nice. A duet is nice. Everyone has a role. But that's not Magid. Magid is the kid asks, Abba, what's the deal? And the father's response has to do with something to do with Egypt. And in the footnote, Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach does go on a similar rant as the Mishnah Brura. Because, by the way, how's Manishtana taught in all the schools? To be saying as like a nice Manishtana, right? What is that not? What is that not? It's not a question. It's almost like Anam Zmiros, right? The kid sings a nice song. And what happens when you're done with a nice song? You move on. And the thing that you do after Anam Zmiros is not necessarily related to the thing that Anam Zmiros. So he says in his own home, he let the kids sing Man and Ishtan in the classical tune. But the idea is that, you know, the Shevach of Man Ishtana is not supposed to stop there. So again, he says, Mefurish, again, a similar idea. Here. The Pshita, here. Ula Acha Sheshalu Aktanim, after the kids asked, Chazar Rabbeinu im Banav Vishar Mesubim Ba'amru Yacht of Manishtana. Whilst they all said it again. Fascinating idea. So after the kids said it, they would go over it again. And then, okay, I get all these footnotes. He's going to go into details about like little things like this that he's not the biggest fan of. So what's my conclusion of the evening? I want to teach a halacha that has nothing to do with the Seder. And then end with Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach, with Rav Soloveitchik. In Hilchos Talmud Torah, Yoredei Resh Memvav, the Shulchan Aruch rules, Harav Shali made, if a Rebbe teaches, Velo Hevinu Atalmidim, and the kids didn't understand, Lo Yichos Aleim. The Rebbe should not get upset with the Talmidim. Rather, what should the Rebbe do? Repeat again and again until the kids, the student, understand what the Rebbe is trying to teach. And what should the kid not do? Say, I understand, Rabbi, when he doesn't really understand. Rather, what should the kid do? What does the Talmud have to do? Ask again and again until what? Until what? He finally understands. Velo yichos. The Rebbe should never get upset. And if the Rebbe gets upset, the Talmud should say, I'm sorry, Rebbe, but it's Torah and I need to learn it. I'm sorry, I don't understand this so easily. Torah, it's Torah. Velilmod ani tzarech, I need to learn it. V'dayti k'tzarech, and my knowledge is limited. Rabbi, I'm sorry, I'm limited. I'm sorry I didn't get it the first time. I'm sorry I didn't get it the second time. Can you please repeat that? And the Talmud should never be embarrassed to ask in front of his friends, because if you're upset, you're never going to learn. If you're embarrassed, you're never going to learn. V'alkein amru lo habayshan lamed. If you're embarrassed, you're never going to learn. But more importantly for this evening, v'lo hakaptan melamed. And if you have a temper, you can't teach. So at the Seder, it's a very nice Mandelstam. You want to conduct an orchestra, a symphony, to have all the kids ask all their questions and lead. But you have people who are hungry. You have people who are tired. You have people who are hot. So again, the two major components. Pique the curiosity. Answer the question. How long that needs to take can be very, very short. Avadim Ayinu officially accomplishes the trick. So if you have a kid who's particularly motivated and you have another kid at the table who wants to shoot him in the head, or maybe even more commonly, an older adult who wants to shoot the kid in the head, you know, for asking too many questions. So that's valid. That's valid. And you as the Seder leader need to move on, and you could, you know, elaborate over the meal and tell the kid after the Seder is over how proud you are of him, pull him over to the side. But I will tell you one story. It was at a Seder relatively recently where there was an unaffiliated, you know, say a Jew without a yeshiva background, who had a lot of questions, and there was a Jew who did have a hungry belly, and he made everyone know that his goal was to get to the meal. And she came up to me during the meal, this innocent woman. Oh, Baruch Hashem, I have a nice role in Pharaoh, and you know, you can invite Jews to your Seder. And the woman said, I wanted to ask you so many questions, Rabbi, but I was afraid to make that man upset. Whoa! That's the opposite of Magid. The opposite of Magid. Just to conclude with some... So, my wife's family, they have Erev Yontif potato gogel. So the slave is deprived of the meaningfulness of speech. He lives in silence, if such a meaningless existence may be called life. He has no message to deliver. In contrast with the slave, the free man bears a message. He has a good deal to tell and is eager to convey his life story to anyone who cares to listen. So in conclusion, it's not only a privilege to ask questions, it's a privilege to be able to teach Torah. And part of the freedom at the Seder is having the freedom to ask the questions and the freedom to tell the story in your unique way. And that is in the exalted evening, Rabbi Ganach's Haggadah and Rav Soloveitchik's Torah, originally from Redemption Prayer in Talmud Torah, page 37 of that Haggadah. And I give everyone a bracha that they should prepare adequately for the Seder to foster those questions and answer those questions, everyone on their own level with their own family style. Hatzlacha, Rabbi.